Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for May 21st, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, the Department of Justice has given a green light to a new major joint venture for wheat milling between Cargill, CHS, and ConAgra. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, a U of I ag economist says Chicago futures traders may be getting ahead of itself on the size of the 2014 corn crop. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Hard red winter July wheat, 761.5, down 6.75. September, 768, down 6. Soft July, 664.25, down 6.25. September, 675.25, down 5.25. July corn, 474.5, up 1. September, 472.5, up 0.25. December, 471.75, down 0.25. Go out to July of 15 at 492.75, up 0.25. July soybeans, 1505.25, up 35.5. September, 1307.25, up 22.5. November, 1253.5, up 21.25. July soybean meal, $4.98.10, up $11.40. August, $4.70.10, up $9. July soybean oil, $40.47, up $40. June live cattle, $138.40, down $35. May feeder cattle, $189.17.5, up $12.5. And June lean hogs, $120 even, and they were up $140. And those are the settlements on this Wednesday afternoon. Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says that rain will be erratically distributed across the Midwest through the next 2 weeks, and some areas will see much more than others, with many areas drying down. No large region is expected to become excessively dry during this forecast period. Planting may not become aggressive right away in wettest areas of eastern North Dakota and northwestern Minnesota, but with warmer temperatures and faster drying rates occurring through the next 2 weeks, planting should accelerate. Areas from North Dakota to Wisconsin will see their best conditions for field work through Friday as temperatures warm and mostly dry conditions occur. The wettest areas from Michigan into Ohio will see some scattered shower activity today, with mostly dry conditions and improving conditions for planting occurring Thursday into Sunday. Southern parts of the western Corn Belt should see a timely increase in rain today through Friday, with occasional rounds of scattered showers continuing into the first days of June. Parts of eastern Kansas, Missouri, western Iowa, and eastern Nebraska are running short on topsoil moisture, and newly planted crops will benefit from the rain. High temperatures Thursday through Saturday will be in the 70s and lower 80s, with some middle 80s in the south and some upper and a few middle 60s in the north and east. Some warming will occur Sunday, and highs Sunday through next Wednesday will be in the upper 70s to the middle 80s, with some middle 70s in the north most days and some upper 80s in the south Sunday and Monday. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
I mean this question quite seriously. Should producers run, not walk, run to whatever method that they like best to, if they haven't done any hedging yet for new crop soybeans, to do some now?
Well, I'll tell you what. We put in the highest weekly close since June the 10th of 2013, and I do believe, yes, they should run and do whatever they can if they haven't done anything. I mean, this is interesting. This is great to see. This is opportunity is what it is. You know, when you look at the bigger picture, we've got a lot of things coming forward. We've got crop progress coming out next week, Tuesday. We've got export sales coming out tomorrow with actually pretty aggressive numbers for beans of late. And then, of course, we've got the June 30th acreage report that will come out, and there will be a lot of speculation about that. And, you know, when the market once focuses back on that, I do believe we're going to see a bigger number for beans. So absolutely take advantage of this. This was really encouraging. It all came on the close today.
Which makes me think there might be some more tomorrow.
It's possible we could get some follow-through. We always have to remember, you know, that this is the week before an extended holiday, and we've got guys that are going to be leaving to go. And there's some guys probably that were actually leaving tomorrow already and be gone on Thursday and Friday. And so you mix that along in there, and basically what it does is gives you opportunity a lot of times.
And the commercials were doing this, right?
The commercials were buying heavy during the day today, yes. And that tells me that, you know, farmers basically are not very willing sellers. I mean, you know, they're all planting. Why would they be? And at the very same time, they know that they've got, you know, the crop is tight, the numbers are tight, and they're going to do anything they can to encourage them to give me the beans. And that's, and you know what happens? They do this type of thing, basis gets better, you don't sell, and the market gets slammed. And then we end up selling at a lower price. So take advantage of this opportunity right here.
So are puts relatively inexpensive at this level?
Well, you have to think that, you know, and I know I hear it all the time that puts are so expensive, it's unbelievable. But when you look at the value of a bushel, on average, you're looking at 12.5% is rule of thumb for what an at-the-money put should be running. If you look at a November right now at $12.50, well, let's take 12.5% times $12.50. It means it should be $1.56. And at this point in time today, the 1260s closed at 68.75 cents.
Oh, quite a value then, if you're an option kind of person.
That's right. Absolutely.
All right, then. Corn, well, it is hanging in there. I'll give it that.
Well, it is. There's no question about it. And it held, you know, July held on to the 100-day moving average today, which was important. December closed above yesterday's low. Woohoo! You know, I don't know if that's a great thing or not, but it's weak right now, and the support is down that 450 area. The big teller will be, number one, export sales tomorrow. You know, they're expecting anywhere from 250 million metric tons to 875 mm-hmm. million. You know, and
the range tells you they really don't have a handle on it.
They don't have a clue, exactly. And bigger than that is going to be crop progress on Tuesday night. Are we 90% planted or aren't we? Once we become above 80%, the trade tends to now start to focus on other things and not so much on this anymore. And so that's why we usually begin to drift to a lower level. It wasn't great either to see that China's imports, on corn from the U.S. were down pretty significantly in the month of April. And so everybody will be focusing on tomorrow and what the export sales actually say, whether we see any cancellations or anything else. But corn's hanging in there, and it's been hanging in there, I think, more because it's gotten support out of wheat, and it's gotten support out of spread unwinding and all of those types of things. But for guys who have done nothing, they really need to be thinking about something at this point in time.
I guess I would say that the degree to the wheat can help corn, but it doesn't seem as though Chicago traders are looking very much beyond the Kansas wheat fields to world wheat economics at the moment.
No, they don't. And, you know, they're going to wait and see once if this Kansas crop really comes in as low as it is. But they'll quickly change, you know, they'll move to a different level immediately. When you, you know, when you look at the hard red winter wheat and you compare that to basically the black sea wheat, well, we're, you know, we're in the game. But if you add freight and everything to it, it makes it much more difficult. I think one of the things that's helping wheat a little bit right now is that we've got severe heat happening in Russia, you know, in that southern area. And that's mostly winter crops. It's heading right now. It's got probably 10 days to make or break it. And so, you know, that'll give us some support. But in general, they're not looking at the big picture.
And also Argentina, right? They're not planting as much wheat.
That's true. In fact, Informa had some really interesting things to say today. They came out and said 12-13 wheat area was the smallest planted in Argentina in 100 years. The planted area in 2013, just their general planted area was for the first time was lower than what it was in the last 80 years. Farmland prices are down 15 to 20% since 12. The peso is devalued 50% since 13. Their meat export ranking, which I was really surprised, you know, declined from third down to 11th in the world. And I do believe that a lot of this is tied right into inflation. You know, their inflation is thought to be very much north of 26%. So life in Argentina is not very good.
I did want to have a little bit of time to talk about livestock because pretty much every analyst I've been talking to in the last week or two have been saying feeder cattle $200 a hundredweight. I mean, in the August we're almost there already. But I wanted to get your take on it because you really do tend to focus on the livestock side quite a bit.
Well, I think, you know, I've said the same thing. I do think that 200 is certainly in the game, and it's in the game for a couple of reasons. One being, you know, during the extreme drought conditions that we've had, we saw cow-calf operations fight like crazy to try and hang on to the mom cows, okay? And so what they ended up doing in a lot of cases is they ended up selling off the babies, you know, selling off the young feeders and getting rid of them. That has put a real, you know, push on supply. It's just not there. And then we got so bad that we started selling cows too. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to take 2 years to bring that back up to where it belongs. So I do believe, you know, that we are going to continue to see this. Now, it's having a huge impact on profitability. You know, and when you look at the crush is absolutely hideous. In fact, when you get out into next year's crush numbers, you're talking about negative numbers. And so it's going to take something to encourage guys to want to feed cattle at all. And that's one of the things we have to keep in mind when we're looking at the corn market, because I just finished talking to one of my fellows yesterday, and he's a relatively large guy, and he doesn't think he's going to raise cattle next year. That puts all that corn out on the market. You know, and so, you know, that's another twist in all the turns we already have in this marketplace.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Dave.
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, and she is in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Department of Justice has filed court papers stating that Cargill, ConAgra, and CHS would have to sell four mills, two in California, one in Texas and one in Minnesota, in order to start up a new major joint venture in the wheat milling industry. In March of last year, Cargill, CHS, and ConAgra, as well as Horizon, agreed to come together and create Ardent Mills, which would combine the operations of 40 flour mills, three bakery mix facilities, and a specialty baker in the U.S., Canada, and Puerto Rico. The three companies issued a news release yesterday stating that they expected to complete the sale of the four milling operations by May 29th to Miller Milling Company. A bipartisan group of nearly 180 U.S. House members have written a letter to USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack and U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman, urging the administration officials to oppose the inclusion of geographical indicators for common food names in the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. under the European Union's GI regulations, place names that are connected with a particular food item are treated as if they were copyrighted names. Examples include Parmesan cheese, champagne, and cognac. In the United States, a number of GIs are seen as generic products, such as cheddar cheese. Trade officials on both sides of the Atlantic have acknowledged that GIs will play a large role in the talks, with EU officials saying that it is a key issue for them. Negotiators currently are meeting in Washington for the latest round of talks. Unless they find common ground on GIs, the overall agreement could be held up well beyond the target date for completion of this year or next. The Senate looks today to confirm Stanley Fischer, a respected economist and former head of the Bank of Israel, as a member of the Federal Reserve's board. The former MIT professor, International Monetary Fund First Deputy Managing Director, and Citigroup Incorporated Vice Chairman is likely to play a pivotal role in guiding the U.S. Central Bank toward a gradual exit from 6 years of interest rates at effectively zero and bond purchases totaling around $3 trillion. PetSmart is the latest major pet food retailer to say it will stop selling dog and cat treats made in China because of continuing fears of their safety. A spokeswoman at PetSmart says it plans to have the treats off all its store shelves by March of 2015. Investigators at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration have not been able to prove that treats made in China are making pets sick, but since 2007, it has received more than 4,800 complaints of pet illnesses and more than 1,000 reports of dog deaths after eating Chinese-made chicken, duck, or sweet potato jerky treats. Two major railroads that serve the upper Midwest and Canadian prairies say that they are making headway in cutting cargo backlogs that are making it tough for farmers needing more fertilizer on hand. BNSF, the larger of the two carriers, told STB last Friday that it has hauled 48 train loads of fertilizer into the region in the last 6 weeks. CP officials say its shipment times for fertilizer to the Midwest have accelerated by 50% from the prior 3 weeks. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The corn market has turned lower. However, as Todd Gleason reports, an ag economist at the University of Illinois thinks the trade may be anticipating a big 2014 crop too early.
USDA, in the first official forecast of the coming corn crop, made it a record-setting bin buster nearly 14 billion bushels strong at 165.3 bushels to the acre. It also lowered total usage by 250 million bushels for the marketing year. 200 of those came out of the export figure, down from 1.9 billion for this year. It may all be too much, but more importantly, says University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good, the trade may be reacting too quickly to put a crop not out of the ground yet into the bin.
Yeah, I think you have to be impressed with how much corn we're consuming, even if you have some trepidation about whether we can export 1.9. You know, the big unknown is really in the feed and residual category. We don't get much new information there until we get the quarterly stocks reports, but that's where all the surprises kind of originate in the balance sheet this late in the marketing year is, do you get a surprise in the stocks report that reveals a surprisingly small or high rate of feed and residual use either in June or September report? And then secondly, you say, well, you know, we're early in the growing season here. We've planted fewer acres. We've got some really slow planting progress in northern states, particularly Minnesota and North Dakota. Will we lose some corn acres there? Will we lose some yield potential there? I wouldn't think that the corn market would want to break substantially at this point.
As was the case earlier in the season, Darrell Good still thinks making cash sales at $5 a bushel on the first 15 to 25% of the expected corn crop is a good place to start. It still is, if those sales haven't been made.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we get some weather glitches here, we'll certainly hit the $5 mark again and might give us another opportunity. And, you know, if not, we still have the luxury, if you will, of the insurance price sitting below the market here that gives us some downside risk protection.
June and July weather will be the primary driving forces in the marketplace during the summer months, along with the USDA grain stocks, acreage, and crop production reports. The grain stocks and acreage reports are due June 30th. The first crop production report for corn comes August 12th. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Scott Butcher of the Andersons, and he is over in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Scott.
Good afternoon.
Off the air, we talked a little bit about the phones being a little bit on the quiet side. And it surprises me to the degree that we have seen this huge run-up in November soybeans, and I would have thought that maybe producers would have been jumping all over if they had, particularly if they hadn't done anything yet.
Yeah, and I think that's the case. I mean, we definitely, if we are having conversations right now, it's around the new crop soybeans. You know, it feels like everybody's got a little bit more interest in doing something at where we are now.
Are they making sales at this level, or are they asking, can I get another quarter tomorrow?
Yeah, definitely. Nobody wants to miss out on another up move, but I think that we are seeing sales at levels we're at right now.
And you were saying, look, crops up and looking good around Clymers.
Yeah, things. We've got a decent start. There, as far as corn, and we do have some soybeans up in the area as well that are poking up through the ground. So. A little bit of sunlight and some warmer temperatures are doing wonders.
What do you make of the break in the last six sessions on the futures market for December corn?
Well, I think more than anything, just the amount of progress that we saw in a short amount of time. You know, obviously there was some concern with colder weather. We had come out of a very cold, harsh winter, and really we're struggling to warm up, and not just in our area, but a lot of different areas. So definitely some concern about planting and how it was going to go, and when we finally got conditions that were a little bit more favorable, things went pretty quickly.
Do you think there's a risk that there might be a little bit more to the downside on the other side of the 3-day weekend?
Sure, yeah, I do think so. I mean, I think if we get into a little bit better pattern of warmer temperatures, and we get some chances for rain sporadically here and there, where we're going to stay somewhat favorable conditions, we're going to see it move down, I feel like.
Which means to me, how much muscle will the basis side have to do to pry out needed corn into the July time frame?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that that's going to be a factor as well. I would say that, if you do have old crop in the bin, if things are moving lower, we're going to see a lot of that stuff start to move.
Why don't we go ahead and get your prices today, please, sir?
Cash corn was $4.66, soybeans $15.40.
Thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you.
That's Scott Butcher of the Andersons. And he is in Clymers, Indiana. That's an ethanol plant facility there. In about 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather with Drew Lerner, meteorologist for World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. It's National Strawberries and Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1901, the first U.S. state motor car legislation was enacted to regulate the speed of motor vehicles. The Connecticut law established a speed limit of 12 miles per hour within city limits and 15 miles per hour outside, which were higher than the 8-mile-per-hour city and 12-mile-per-hour county speeds in the bill as originally presented. Also, the car driver was required to reduce speed upon meeting or passing a horse-drawn vehicle and, if necessary, to stop to avoid frightening the horse. In 1916, daylight savings time was introduced in Britain as a wartime measure to save fuel. The legislation was first considered in 1907, but the change failed for lack of support. Few liked the proposal, which called for adjustment of clocks in 4 weekly 15-minute chunks. When reintroduced in 1916 as a one-hour move, it passed. In 1929, the first automatic electric stock quotation board was put into operation by Sutro and Company of New York City. This was the first major advance in market information since the Edison ticker. The board was able to display the open, high, low, and last prices of each stock listed and automatically shifted the figures as changes were made. It was the first of a network of electronically posted blackboards serving the securities industry, activated by a central transmitting station via telegraph lines. The system eventually reached over 700 brokerage offices from coast to coast. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Scattered showers and thunderstorms over much of the Midwest coming, huh?
Indeed. It looks like we will see a lot of precipitation coming up. Actually, probably the biggest news is, of course, the big soaking rain coming up for hard red winter wheat country. It's that particular storm system that will eventually spread scattered showers and thunderstorms across a big part of the Midwest. A lot of that occurs here over the weekend and into the early part of next week. And before we get to that point, we do have a little frontal boundary that's lying across the lower parts of the Midwest here today, and it will set off a few scattered showers and thunderstorms over the next 2 days as it remains somewhat stationary near the Ohio River. The precipitation will be somewhat erratic and mostly light. I think we'll be able to dodge a lot of the showers and thunderstorms, and fieldwork will probably advance around them. But the main rain event of the week is indeed that storm system coming out of the southern plains. It's going to be a big soaker for hard red winter wheat country. Comes a little late, unfortunately, for the crop down in Texas and Oklahoma. We'll see a little bit of a quality improvement there, but not necessarily any change in yield. But Kansas, Nebraska, and Colorado will all see a big boost in yields as this heavier rain event gets underway, and we'll start to see it occurring in the High Plains region over the next 2 days, and then it will start moving across the heart of hard red winter wheat country as we get into the heart of the weekend, and then it will be moving through the western and central parts of the Corn Belt as we finish out the holiday weekend and move into the early part of next week. And yes, almost everybody in the Midwest will be impacted by the system eventually.
And warmer temperatures behind it?
There is a tendency here for our temperatures to stay warm over this next full week to maybe 8 or 9 days. I think some cooling will come in the early part of June. But by then we should be pretty well planted, I'm hoping, and that we'll have some of these crops off to a very good start. A lot of upper 70 and 80 degree days coming up over this next 7 day period.
So they should be able to get a crop in Minnesota and North Dakota?
That's a little bit more of a reach. For them, the precipitation is going to be a little bit too frequent. I think we have 3 days right now, today, tomorrow, and on Friday, where they can get into the fields if they're not too wet and be able to work. But after that, I think there's going to be rain chances every day in those areas up there for the following full week. So it may not rain everywhere, but there's going to be a chance for it, and some of those fields are probably not going to be able to be planted for a while.
Give us your best guess a little bit further out, because some of my analysts who work with clients in those regions are saying that producers are going to plant into June if they can.
Yeah, I certainly think that they will need to do that, and it looks like the weather in early June is probably going to be somewhat the same as here late May, at least initially. I think probably late in the first week of June And going into the second week, we may see a little better opportunity for some drying conditions. That's when the coolest air should come around. It should change our upper air flow pattern to the northwest, and that should bring in drier air to some of those areas. But that won't be until the end of the first week of June.
Thank you very much, Drew.
Have a great day.
Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.